Hometown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. As we break down all things Kings versus Pelicans, we will get into some Niners, and we will definitely get into some Niners here with our guy who joins us, as he does every week. And again, all guests and callers join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee and Candlestick Chronicles. Chris, how are you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm outstanding. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. I don't know about outstanding, but we're trying to get there. What did you think about the game last night with the Kings and Pelicans? And when you hear, quote unquote, bad matchup, are you buying it or do you think it is a little bit of a cop out?
Well, I guess that depends on how you view that term. I was in New Orleans for the Kings two games against the Pelicans a few weeks ago, and it was very clear that they just don't have the bodies for Zion Williamson and or Brandon Ingram. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to zoom out and make this a big picture sort of statement about the Kings roster, I think it's a pretty compelling case that that you could probably afford to find some bigger wing defenders. And I don't know, frankly, how the Kings do that, right? They're sort of limited in the assets that they have that might allow them or that might put them in play for somebody like OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam if they want to make a move like that at the trade deadline. Yeah, they have a lot of picks, but I don't envision them ever trading Keegan Murray. And then that makes you question, you know, like, would they ever include Domantas Sabonis in a deal like that? I don't know. So it's, you know, I think the Kings, their biggest impediment to winning a championship right now is that defense. It's not a new thought, but you're going to be going against big wing offensive players in the playoffs. And if you are trying to win a championship, like is the Kings' stated goal, right? You just need to get better in that area. And they're not getting enough from Harrison Barnes in that regard. Keegan Murray, obviously a second year player who's shown plenty of promise offensively, is still cutting his teeth a little bit on the defensive end. And I credit the Kings for, you know, giving him those tough defensive assignments, but he's just not a defensive stopper yet. So can the Kings improve defensively with a trade? That remains to be seen. Can they improve with what they already have? I think they're hoping that they can, but I would question if they can get to that level with the guys they already have. And I think these last few games against the Pelicans would certainly prove that point.
Chris, yeah, you mentioned you were on that road trip where, yeah, I think they had two different in-season tournament games during that stint. The vibe from last night after the game was pretty down. It did seem like those guys did kind of take that loss a little bit harder than I think you would take a traditional regular season loss. But the funny thing is it does seem like in the lead up to the games, at least they were playing it a little bit coy in terms of how much they felt like they cared about the tournament. Did you get any sort of vibe for how much this team, how much importance they put or value they put into this tournament on that road trip?
I think the Kings organization as a whole is just really like really looking for any recognition they can get.
Sure.
Right? Like I think that's been a thing for the Kings organization over the last few years. And you know, like having Mike Brown be a unanimous coach of the year, was huge for them. Having Keegan Murray be an all rookie team member is huge for them. Having Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox get recognized as all stars, but probably more importantly, all NBA players is huge for the Kings. So I think organizationally, I think the players in the locker room, I think the coaches, they all really wanted to do well in the in-season tournament to get some of that national recognition that comes with winning games. But ultimately, in my opinion, like, They're going to get national recognition from playing winning basketball in the playoffs. Like you win playoff rounds, you're going to get on national televised games. You're going to get the respect that the team and the organization so badly covets. So, I think the in-season tournament was big for them. And you know, they have a few guys who have made a very good amount of money in the league or are set to make a very good amount of money in the league. And the $500,000 probably wasn't going to be life-changing for them. But, you know, the people like Colby Jones, or guys at the end of the roster could certainly, you know, would certainly love to win $500,000 in the in-season tournament. So there's an element of that where you have veterans wanting to do right by the young guys and say, hey, let's put a little bit of let's put some life-changing money in your bank account and see, you know, so that I think that was important for them and the competitive aspect. I do think for one thing the in-season tournament does is it provides teams that aren't often in that national spotlight, in that championship conversation. It offers them an opportunity to stand out a little bit. And I think that's what the Kings were hoping to get from that in-season tournament experience.
Talking to Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee and the Candlestick Chronicles. Chris, switching it over to the Niners. And Chris, I mean, you know how it is when you're coming up with content. The Niners do something like this, and it's really reminiscent of the beginning of the season where, okay, I guess they're just the best team in the NFL, and that's what it feels like right now. What were your thoughts on the butt-kicking of the Philadelphia Eagles and what's next for the Niners? I don't even know. We were talking about a letdown game. I think they could have if they get. It's really the Ravens, and that's it. Not to disrespect any other teams, but what did you think about what you saw from the Eagles and what's next for the Niners?
Yeah, I thought the 49ers would win that game going in. I didn't think it would be that lopsided. Mm-hmm. I thought the 49ers just emotionally had a lot more sort of to prove in that game. And the Eagles, given the gauntlet of their recent schedule and the fact that, you know, their defense played 92 snaps a week prior in that overtime game against Buffalo, I just thought it was the right spot for the 49ers to go in and make a statement. But I wasn't envisioning that type of statement. Right. That was a completely dominant performance. And you look at the landscape of the league right now, you know, as the season's gone on, it's felt like that there are fewer teams probably capable of winning the Super Bowl than maybe we thought early on in the year. Like, it feels like it's the Niners, it's Philly, it's Kansas City, and maybe it's Baltimore, right? Like, I don't know. Do you feel good enough about Dallas and what Dak Prescott has done against, you know, a lot of bad teams to think that they're in that Super Bowl mix, particularly considering what the Niners did to them earlier in the season, right? So it just feels like that group of elite teams is shrinking, and the 49ers are sort of differentiating themselves from all the other teams that would be in that mix, you know, like the Jaguars. I know Trevor Lawrence is hurt, but the Jaguars are a top seed in the AFC. The 49ers went there and throttled them, right? Mm-hmm. The 49ers went and throttled the Eagles on the road. They went and throttled the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road. They're just rolling through these teams, and they're so balanced and so efficient and just complete on both sides of the ball that, you know, it makes you feel like unless a catastrophic injury happens, you know, knock on wood, that this should be clearly at this point the best team in the NFL. And as we get further removed from that three-game losing streak, you can, you know, maybe look to some extenuating circumstances, not to use them as an excuse, but, you know, when you don't have Trent Williams and Debo Samuel in those games, and you have a short week coming back home to play the Cincinnati Bengals, who were coming off their bye week, like, you know, there might be some extenuating circumstances in that blowout loss that you had, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think that the Niners are differentiating themselves from the rest of the NFL. And I think they're pretty clearly cut now as the number one team in the league, as long as they can stay healthy.
Chris, I was listening yesterday to the Candlestick Chronicles podcast, and
appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic pod. And I heard you say something that I need you to reiterate to our audience. I heard you say, that you called this the Debo Samuel legacy game. Can you just explain to our audience why you felt that way and why you feel like Sunday was just the statement Debo game for his career?
Yeah, I mean, there was so much talk, right? Like, Debo Samuel, I think Debo Samuel is somebody who's not going to spout off unless he really believes it, right? Like, he went on Radio Row at the Super Bowl last year after the 49ers were eliminated and basically said to anybody who asked him that the 49ers would have rolled the Eagles had Brock Purdy been healthy in that game. And, you know, that's a bold statement, but I think Debo isn't going to say something like that publicly unless he really believes it. So I was really interested to see, you know, how he was going to play in this game and the lead up to it. And he certainly didn't back down from anything he said before the game, talking to reporters, say, I have no regrets about anything I said. And then to go into that game, score three touchdowns, and just be the dominant force that we know he could be, but just to have that game in that spot is going to be the most memorable game of, you know, Debo Samuel's regular season career for sure. And he's obviously had some moments in the playoffs, thinking back to 2021 and even when he carried the 49ers during the regular season that year too. You know, it reminded like that. That game reminded me of the Saints in 2019, the Saints game when George Kittle had the 4th-and-2 reception that set up the game-winning field goal, and how that game or that play sort of was the signature moment of the season. And when the 49ers made their Super Bowl run, you sort of think about that play in the regular season. To me, if the 49ers make a Super Bowl run this year, we're going to think about, you know, Deebo Samuel, particularly if they get the number one seed, right? That's the other thing coming out of that game. They now have a realistic chance of the number one seed. If they can win out and the Eagles lose one, the Niners can snag that. And so if they do, I will think about Deebo Samuel's performance in that Philadelphia game, particularly given all the extenuating circumstances, all the talk, all the chatter. It's just one of those games that, you know, sort of makes a career. And Deebo Samuel is somebody who's super unique and super talented, and Kyle Shanahan said he's probably the best guy in the league when it comes to just having the ball in his hands. And I think, you know, Sunday was just an example, and he's super important, not only from a production standpoint, but just from a mentality standpoint. And he just embodies that toughness that he has and the versatility that he has, just sort of embodies this 49ers team. And I think it makes him one of the most important players they have on their roster.
Chris Biederman, Sacramento Bee, Candlestick Chronicles. Chris, thank you as always, and we will talk to you again next week, my friend. Good stuff, and hopefully when we're talking next week, we can talk about some Kings W's as well as another Niner W.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you guys soon. Happy holidays.
Same to you. All righty. Thank you to Chris Biederman, Sacramento Bee, and Candlestick Chronicles. Got to get to a break. When we get back, yeah, there's a guy in that starting lineup for the Kings, and we took it easy on him. We gave him over an hour without calling him out. That ends when we get back. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Taking you up to 2 p.m. Thank you again to Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles in Sacramento B. As Nate is doing calisthenics behind the glass.
What's going on, Nate?
He's
getting it going.
I dropped, I'm eating this carrot back here. Dropped it on the ground, kind of popped up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got a little hype
so
up.
So he's
there
not
you go.
Working out.
I'm there not working out now.
Gotta stay active. I got my new physical therapist out here.
Oh, nice.
In Natomas, so I have my new, I'm working through it. I have my new list of stretches to go through. She said we're around 6 weeks away from hopefully running again.
Is there any conflicting ideals between your two PT people?
No. Okay. She was really happy with what I was doing in the Bay Area. I showed her all the workouts that I've been doing, so she just added on to it. So we're going to phase that. We'll do that for 6 more weeks, start to phase that out.
Oof.
And start to implement the next phase of the plan, so I should be running here again in about 6 weeks.
I got a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I usually run on the treadmill. I went for a traditional run, actually around here on Saturday.
Okay.
And my legs were like sore from that compared to the treadmill. Does that happen to you? Do you feel a difference between the two?
I'm just not really, I just don't really like the treadmill that much.
Okay.
So it doesn't feel different to me. I just run slower on the treadmill than I do when I'm just running out in the wild.
I'm just wondering, like, coming back from an Achilles, like, do
no,
they
I haven't
recommend?
Ran yet, though.
I know, but will they have you start treadmill and
I
then
would
go?
Guess that because you
softer
know I can't be I can't be trail running and
that's
things
just a brutal
like
injury.
Stepping into potholes. Would,
yeah. They had
no,
come on. They were they got McAfee on the show.
Yeah.
Or they had Rogers on McAfee in here earlier, and they're like feeling up his Achilles and stuff. So he's I mean, he's going to beat you back.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Yeah.
I mean,
all that's holding him back is
right?
the Jets.
I did not get the bridge surgery or whatever it's called. So, hey, good on him.
He's got that Captain America serum, I think.
I mean, actually, no. I was actually in the 80th percentile for the mass that has come back on my calves. So.
Really?
Nice.
You know, it's nothing to sneeze at.
Whoa. Yeah. Humble brag.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Some light.
80th
you know?
Percentile muscle growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She looked at my captain yesterday. She said, wow, that's pretty close.
She said, this guy's got some... I hope your wife doesn't know about that.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
You were hurt?
I'm just, you know, like Captain America, I came back, you know.
You're saying it was bigger than this before. That's what she said? Something like that.
916-339-1140. On the YouTube chat, Michael Baldacci is saying, as far as Shohei is concerned, that Toronto has a really big Japanese culture.
Really?
So that might be one of the reasons.
Interesting. The more you learn.
Yes. So that. So if you are just now joining us, thank you for joining us. Shohei, it seems like he has narrowed it down, depending on, this is according to Bob Nightingale, the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Blue Jays.
Pointless exercise. If you were Shohei, what would you be looking for?
If I was Shohei, it's a shame that San Diego couldn't figure it out.
Right.
Because I love to live in San Diego with that offense.
You get pretty much all the perks of L.A.
All the perks of L.A. and not being in L.A., right? So it's a shame that San Diego, I don't know if money-wise they could. Well, I mean, in baseball, you can just pay whoever you want. So it's a shame that they couldn't figure it out in San Diego with Tatis and Machado. I would have looked at San Diego because you got a stacked lineup, but they haven't won anything.
And you got the market, too. Yeah,
and you got the market. It's a party in there. Yeah. So
probably you don't have the pressure either. Like
exactly.
If you go to the Dodgers, like especially if Shohei goes to the Dodgers, it's y'all just won one title with Shohei. Like no, that's four or five you got to be winning at that point. And if he goes to the Padres, it's like you win one in 10 years and you're a god.
Maybe Shohei, like us, Drake was at the top of his Spotify and he wants to kick it in the six.
It could really be as simple as that. It really could.
There you go. 916-339-1140. Let's get out to TC. TC, you're beating us to it. You got something to say about Harrison Barnes, because we got something to say.
Yes, Hounds and Chris, what's up?
What's up? What you got for us?
Hey, check it out. Look, you know what? HB, we got to make a move on HB. We got to, like, throw him in a trade or something. But this last night, and what's kind of been going on was bigger than HB. We already know what HB is, and we already know that we have to move on or move him to the bench. So we don't need to keep, like, talking about HB. I'm coming from a different perspective. Last night was the first time I was really, truly livid at Mike Brown and his rotation and how he approached the game. If you're holding everybody accountable, well, then Fox should have been benched. He dropped the 30, but he turned over the ball five times, and he was out letting the refs get in his head, and he was outside of his element. He should have been on the bench. Davion should have came in or something along those facts. Domas, I call you guys all the time talking about Domas. I don't care about his 26-11. That dude stands in the paint and he never contests anybody's shot. I watch him time after time last night just stand there and watch Valanciunas do dream shakes, hook shots, grabbing rebounds. Bro, you play with this dude on Lithuania. How you don't know him? How can't you beat him? How can't you box him out? I'm tired of that, bro. Last night, these dudes let the refs get in their head. Mike, you got to settle this team down. And when somebody's not showing up, Mike, you got to reach out to the bench and be like, let's shake something up. We were up 15, bro. It looked like we was going to blow the doors off these dudes. You look up in the second quarter, we're down 15. Like, come on. That loss last night was on Mike. Mike should have been having them players. And if you wasn't trying to show up, I know Fox had 30. But if you're not showing up and you turn over the ball, bro, check it out. You got to sit down, and we got to put some new blood in the game. I'm serious, and Domas really has to start contesting shots, dog. I'm tired of him just standing in the paint, letting everybody have their way with him, man. I'm livid, bro. I send my condolences to that to the fan that passed away last night at the game. That really hurt me, bro. But as far as that game, I'm still living, man. We're supposed to be in the in-game tournament. This team is not established enough to be overlooking, like, oh, I'm not tripping. We got knocked out. I'm not worried about it. No, bro. Winning this tournament would have been an accomplishment, man. I'm sick. I'm mad right now.
No, I feel you, TC. I can literally feel it through the phone that you are upset. And I get it. I get it. Look, Mike Brown is a guy who we all love, and he gives us sound bites, and he, you know, has really turned around this franchise and this team in general. But nobody is perfect, and nobody is – when you lose, everybody deserves some of the blame. Now, do I think that the answer was benching De'Aaron Fox?
Yeah. That's my thing.
I don't know. Probably not, because you're just stuck in a situation.
Yeah.
The reason you get on Harrison Barnes when he makes a mistake is because the highs of Harrison Barnes
aren't much different than the lows, sure. Right? So you could find maybe some highs somewhere else. I know De'Aaron was turning the ball over, but there's nobody else on that bench that's going right. to give you what De'Aaron gives you. So that's why, you know, and Mike Brown, compared to other teams and other coaches, does go more college, high school in terms of I'll play with the hot hand. But when there is a drop-off between De'Aaron and whoever, and Malik yeah. is not really the backup point guard, and De'Aaron and Davion, you just can't afford to do it. You are not in a situation where you can, again, go kind of high school, college, and say, I'm going to punish you, and let's see what Davion can do. That's the thing about the pros.
Yeah.
We know what Davion can do. That's why he's on the bench.
Right. I mean, it's just that this team is deep, but it does kind of feel like, in some sense, they're deep in the wrong places. Like, mm-hmm. they have a surplus of two guards that they can throw out there. They have so many power forwards they can throw out there, but they don't have depth at small forward, which we talked about for a big part of the show earlier. But to TC's point, like, into what you just said, take De'Aaron out for who?
Yeah.
Take De'Aaron out for who? Because it's not going to be Davion, because the offense isn't going to
run as well.
This is your
reigning player of the week 2 weeks
yeah.
in a row.
No. Yeah. Also, I would say De'Aaron's allowed to have a bad game.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's – and Sabonis, same story, where it's like, take out Sabonis – for who? You want JaVale McGee to check in? I mean, he didn't have it last night like he did on Saturday. You want them to go small maybe and go with Trey Lyles at the center?
That's the only answer.
That's good luck with that against Jonas Valanciunas. I mean, I think that Monty kind of does need to look at the current construction of this roster, and I think, you know, Mike Brown's talked about why the offense doesn't look the same way it's looked last year, and, you know, this team is trying to take more of a defensive approach. I don't know if the roster itself lends itself to that style of play or mm-hmm. the style of play that they want to eventually get to. So I think, no, Mike Brown is definitely not excused from playing his part in the blame. I definitely think he deserves some of it. But I think, frankly, I mean, when it specifically comes to these kind of matchups against New Orleans and against Houston, I think obviously gave the Kings problems, and I think Minnesota will give the Kings problems in the future. I don't know if, to even Biederman's point, I don't know if this team is built that way. I don't know if they just flat out don't have the bodies to throw against a lot of how NBA teams are built. Like, a lot of NBA teams have multiple, you know, long rangy guys, and the Kings just don't have really any.
It's a wing driven league, and you have no wings.
Yeah. You got Keegan, he's a developing wing.
You got Keegan.
Harrison, who's. He's there.
Yeah. He exists, as was said in the post-game press conference last night. And, you know, the thing about the in-season tournament, to TC's point, and we talked about the importance,
yeah.
let's not forget, I think that one of the worst parts of this loss is that not only did you lose, and I know it's separate, but not only did you lose – and Tyrese Haliburton had a party yeah. in the game prior.
Right.
But Keegan Murray tweaks his back, right. and you brought him back in. You wanted to win.
Yeah.
You wanted to win bad, and you couldn't get it done. Nate's right. giving yeah. me that eye.
De'Aaron played 40 minutes,
and you lost by 10. Got to get to a break. When we get back, Harrison Barnes. How much blame should Harrison Barnes get? Are we being too mean to Harrison Barnes? Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube.
Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Caleb Williams from USC, going to college football, has decided to sit out the DirecTV Holiday Bowl. Remember that name for our game when we play our bowl games. The DirecTV Holiday Bowl. Caleb Williams has decided not to play, which always... depends on who you ask, and depends on the year whether people care or not. Let's not yeah. forget, what was it? Nick Bosa did not play mm-hmm. in his bowl game when he was with Ohio State.
I don't think McCaffrey did either.
McCaffrey as well. So
would you play
if it wasn't a national championship?
Coming off an Achilles.
Coming off an Achilles, man, you know, I can't mess up the
love
back
the
for
game,
my family.
You know?
We were throwing the ball yesterday, me and you.
Nate, tell me about my spiral. Tell me about my lefty spiral.
It was good. It was good. It was nice. It was nice. It was one of those, like, plastic balls.
No, it was in the garage. It was in the garage.
Yeah, but it's like one of those, it's not, obviously not, it's one of those super grippy, like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was tighter than mine.
There you go.
I do think I could probably throw farther, but.
That's not true. I can throw farther than you right now.
We've got an empty
I think I can
field
throw 40
there,
yards.
We can settle this.
Nate.
By the way, I can throw further
you're
than both
little,
of you, but that's
you're
fine.
A little quacky with your throws, if we're gonna be honest.
Okay. Well, I don't know what the H that means, but okay.
They're ducks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, because it's a plastic child's ball, so that might be it.
I don't really understand what you mean by that.
I'm just...
I don't know.
Just stating facts. If we're stating facts here.
If you're an athlete, you can...
I don't know how this turned into a fight, because this came out...
No. If you're an athlete, you can...
Never said that.
You know, you can perform with any size of equipment.
There you go.
All right.
You really saved that one.
Tough one for the Kings last night.
Tough one.
By the way, I can outthrow both of you. So
okay,
this is a pointless.
So
exercise.
Caleb Williams not playing. Are you moved?
Okay, disrespect.
Are you moved? Do you care?
I mean, I think it's. I always think it's an interesting decision for everybody. I think, you know, for sure. I think in an ideal world, finish out the season. Mm-hmm. You know, you did all the work of getting yourself to that bowl. Just because it's not the bowl game you'd want. I get it. You don't want to get injured for no reason for a game that doesn't matter for mm-hmm. you. But, you know, I don't know. Like, college is a very unique experience. You know, like, you're never going to be on a team with everybody who's around the same age as you. And, like, you know, it's just never – it only gets more and more serious as you get further and further along in your football career. So, I don't know. I personally would – if he were my child or my brother or something, I would probably advise, hey, man, just – it's a lot easier said than done, but just go out there and do it, you know? Like, and I totally understand the injury front of it.
No.
And there's no benefit, but I don't know. I'm a purist.
Absolutely
in
not.
Sense.
The Holiday Bowl, if you don't sit down next to me, we will be watching it. You can go watch it on the sideline.
Sure.
You know what's weird, though? And to answer your question, no. If it wasn't a national championship in contention.
So you just think you're better than the rest of your teammates?
If I'm going the first round, yeah, I am. I do think that.
You just think you're the first pick of the draft?
No,
and
yeah,
so,
I did.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. But you know what's weird about this situation is that normally when players sit out, you leave.
Right, yeah.
He could sit out and come back and be like, psych.
Too. Yeah.
Or he's not. I don't think he would transfer.
I mean, he was very disappointed with how this season went.
That's true. That would be his third school.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, I mean... Normally, when you transfer,
it's like, I'm going to the league.
I'm seeing it, but it'd be, hey, it is a bit weirder to say, hey, you guys weren't good enough for me to play with you for the Holiday Bowl, but we back on.
But I'm
lit
really not trying to be a Chicago Bear next year, so I'll see y'all in the summer.
Yeah, we're back lit today, so it'll be interesting to see who else doesn't play when it comes. I mean, Drake May said anything, but I would assume same idea. As we get back to King's talk, and, you know, I've been just trying to avoid this. Me and Nate are getting into fights because I'm just trying to avoid what is going to snowball as soon as I say the two words, Harrison Barnes.
Oh, boy.
Because Harrison Barnes got absolutely fried last night. A lot of people
Check socials, Harrison, please.
No, and I don't think he does. And maybe it would help if he actually did. Who knows? But Harrison Barnes, I'm just going to be honest here. Three field goal attempts. One field goal, he had one three-pointer, made one free throw. He had 4 points in 34 minutes. I can't even play. He had 4 rebounds, which is actually high for Harrison Barnes. 1 assist.
Two turnovers.
Somehow he had a steal, and people are done. And, you know, I went on to say – we'll get to some of Mike Brown's sound as well. But I went on to say last night, because Mike Brown was saying how, oh, well, we don't run plays for Harrison Barnes. That was a big thing. We don't run plays for Harrison Barnes. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not even just about running plays for Harrison Barnes. It's about offensively and defensively. We just talked about guys that have calling cards. We talked about Herbert Jones, right? We talked about, and then maybe he'll give you something. But you know why he's there. So this is what we're going to do, Chris.
Yep, okay.
This is what we're going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to read through the Kings lineup, the Kings roster.
Okay.
And we are going to explain what it is they do, right? And
what
why,
their role
what,
is.
What their role
What you
is.
Expect from them on a night basis.
Okay. Keegan Murray.
Hit threes, and at this point, I mean, he's defending the other team's probably best ball handler, or if not, their best scoring option. I mean, we've seen him guard anywhere from Steph Curry to, he probably would have been thrown on Paul George and Kawhi. So, yeah, that's Keegan Murray's role.
Domantas Sabonis.
Set up everybody else, be physical, rebound, and be vertical on defense.
Kevin Huerter.
Hit threes. And just don't be a liability defensively, really. Mm-hmm. That's probably what they ask him every day. Just go out there, give max effort, and hit some shots.
De'Aaron Fox.
Everything.
The
just
engine.
Do everything.
Right. Trey Lyles.
Come in, give a spark, space the floor, and rebound.
Malik Monk. Spark plug.
Do you, man.
Right.
just
offensive spark
just
plug.
Get
off
out the
bench.
Way.
Right. Keon Ellis.
Defend for sure. I mean, he's in there for defense. He's and really to just stay afloat offensively, knock down a shot if you're open.
Sasha Vezenkov.
Shoot that thing. Yeah. Shoot that thing, and again, don't be a liability defensively. Just slide your feet and stay out of foul trouble.
JaVale McGee.
Rim protection, really. Rim protection and pick and roll. Mm-hmm. That's what we want from JaVale.
Kessler Edwards.
I mean, that's energy. That's he's going to come in, bring energy, defense. Anything offensively is really a bonus.
Davion Mitchell.
Just do him. Be a hound on defense. And, yeah, offensively, make shots. He's not really asked to be a playmaker, facilitator. Just knock down an open three. Keep the offense moving.
Harrison Barnes.
I mean, if you were to say something, I mean, it's all been setting up for this. Fill in the gaps. I guess. Like that's what his goal is. Like, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to play into
the gaps.
Bit. But, like, yeah, I mean, his role, if I had to guess, would be do the dirty work. Again, if you have an open shot, take it. Defensively, he's not asked like Keegan. Like, he's not asked to guard the best defender. He's kind of just asked to guard. I'm really not, like, I swear I'm not trying to play into the bit, but I think that's, like, I think his role is Swiss Army knife. Like, go out there.
Come on now.
Whatever the team needs, like, just.
He does not deserve that term.
I mean, Mike Brown quite literally said last night, like, I don't run plays, not to demean him. But,
right.
You know,
let's hear from Mike. Yeah. We have the sound. Let's hear from Mike Brown.
Building off of Jake's question there, you mentioned pregame, each player has helped identify their role and share it in front of the team. Can you share the specifics of what Harrison's identified role is and what you are looking to see from him on a night-to-night basis?
We're still defining the role, so it's not, but I can tell you just in general, he's going to have to help us rebound. He's going to take on some tough defensive assignments, right? And then, he's going to shoot the ball when he's open. The one thing that you guys have to understand is I don't call any plays for HB. Everything he does, he kind of gets off of others. And so, that's going to bring amount of inconsistency, too, because he doesn't get a single play call for him.
Interesting.
He's going to have to rebound.
Yeah.
When is the last time Harrison Barnes got more than 5 rebounds?
In a game? It's this season has been
in a practice.
I think he was still with the Warriors.
He's grabbing boards during practice.
This has not been a good rebounding season for Harrison. This is definitely...
What's he averaging?
That's what I was trying to pull up here. Our internet's running a little bit slow, but I mean, I was checking earlier in the season, and he was at 2.5 rebounds a game, which
he's
is
going. This is from Mike Brown. This is from Mike Brown, head coach. He's going to have to rebound for us. Harrison Barnes in the 2023-2024 season is averaging 3.3 rebounds. He's going to have to rebound for us.
He's playing 30-plus minutes, too, right? I mean, in terms of his averages.
Mike, when is he going to start rebounding for us?
He has gotten over 5 rebounds twice this season.
How many times
against the Clippers?
How many times has Red Velvet gotten more than 5 rebounds? Probably about 10.
Probably. I mean, yeah, he's had a couple nights in which, I mean, and that's not even what, I mean, and even in Mike Brown's answer there, like he doesn't really have, he's kind of filibuster. He's like, you know, undefined role, but, you know, a little bit of everything in general. Yeah, I mean, how about I just read for you Kevin Huerter's last, I don't know, 6 games of rebounding? Mm-hmm. He had 7, 2, 9, 5, 6, and then 5 last night. So
I guess everybody's going to have to rebound for us.
He's doing it. Kevin's playing his role. And, like, that's the thing is, and, you know, yeah, there's only a certain amount of rebounds to go out, but you see Sabonis. You see how aggressive Sabonis is going for
it. I don't even see Harrison down there, though.
That's exactly what I'm saying is, like, especially if you're, like, Kevin, again, we can say Kevin's role. Kevin's going to be asked to take threes and, you know, again, defend at a decent level and clearly rebound. Harrison's not scoring. And so Mike Brown last year would be adamant with Keegan. If your shot isn't falling, that doesn't mean that you should just not, you should Tony Snell out there and have no other stats. You're out there to play basketball. You play 34 minutes. You should have a lot more than 4 rebounds. You should have a lot more than 1 assist. I know it's
how do you
okay.
have 1
you
assist
can live
in
with
this
4.
Offense?
It makes no sense.
How? And I get where you get the ball, but we got
3 total shots. What was that? And I think 2 of those were in the first quarter.
We got to get to a break. When we get back, I believe that the Beam regime and Kings media can affect Harrison Barnes being on this roster because it's happened before. Geez. It has happened
this
before
man is trying to run him out of
with
town.
Another team that we talk about on this show. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. Shout out to the YouTube chat, holding it down as always. And thank you to all you who have called and text so far. 916-339-1140 if you want to be a part of the conversation. Got some text to read through. I have a tweet here from a former coworker. Says, I was sitting behind the Kings bench last night. When HB got pulled, he looked so disengaged and walked directly to the locker room, .. Seemed odd. So I'm trying to think about when...
Walks to the tunnel. He doesn't walk to the locker room. He'll usually go on the... He goes on the elliptical, on the bike, and
there
just kind of bikes it out.
916 on the text line.
Because he's a professional. That's what
right.
veterans do.
They
keep
know
your body warm.
They know how to wear suits now. It's time. All the Kings need from Harrison Barnes... is 10 points tops. Harrison looks half asleep out there most of the time. From another 916, Harrison Swiss Army Knife Barnes. Yeah, that's exactly what I think. Laughing, LOL. Nick from the No. Another 916.
You don't like the Swiss Army Knife?
Another 916. That was by far the worst game of Fox's career.
That's not true. That's also definitely not
true. That cannot be true.
That's not true.
That is not true.
I can guarantee it's not.
You know, the Harrison Barnes thing, everybody, there's always the most popular guy on the team is the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
And there's always got to be a cop-out on a starting lineup when you're not doing well. And yesterday, when I mentioned how Harrison Barnes, it's not about the offense or defense, it's just about the fact that he's neither. We're trying to figure out what his role actually is. What exactly is it that you do here, Mr. Barnes? Somebody said, one of my kind of leftover followers from being in the Bay said, hey, well, Harrison Barnes in 2014-2015 was an even lesser player. Because I said, you cannot win a championship with Harrison Barnes with just having an open spot in your starting lineup. And they said... Harrison Barnes was this or lesser than this in 2014-2015, and the Warriors won the whole thing. And they said, checks notes. Warriors starting lineup in 14-15 had Harrison Barnes. I get what you're saying, but Barnes literally was a lesser version of himself now, was a starter, and they won a championship.
Different situation. Completely different situation.
I said, check stats. So in 2014-2015, Harrison Barnes' split was 10-5-1. In 2023-2024, it is 11-3-1. So he's averaging one more point this season. All those years ago, he averaged two more rebounds. There's so much wrong with this comparison. Yes, there's so much wrong with this comparison that I don't know where to start. And number one is that that was also the year. Now, I get it if we're saying, hey, De'Aaron Fox is trying to take that leap. But Steph Curry was the MVP.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Steph Curry was the MVP. Situation. You had Klay Thompson. So as much as the Kings can shoot, this is historically the best. This is pre-injury Klay Thompson. Yeah. Klay Thompson was an all-star. Yes. So they had two all-stars that season. And so you had the best shooting backcourt of all time.
Yeah.
An MVP, mm-hmm. and I would say that with all that,
don't forget
I would,
a good Draymond too,
a good like Draymond, a pre
prime Draymond,
a pre KD Draymond. So Draymond was averaging probably like between 10, yeah. 12 points.
That's where
back
he was
then.
Actually near triple doubles,
exactly,
not triple,
triple singles.
Great bench too. I mean, with
yeah.
great Ziggy
bench,
and,
Bazemore, yeah.
So
yeah.
if you're looking at, I would imagine out of those 10 points that Harrison was averaging. How many of those, and I know you hate this term, mm-hmm. but seriously, between Klay and Steph, how many of those 10 points per game were due to the gravity of Steph and Klay? It's just a different team, sure. right? So there, how many cheapies did Harrison get? And he still only averaged 10 compared to, I feel like the 11 points, I don't want to say are more hard-earned, but it's, hey, it's your turn to shoot the basketball, Harrison. That's how it works here, even though they don't run plays for him. So I'm just saying, even though he got 10, I think it's a ballooned 10 is my point.
Sure.
Anybody, if it wasn't Harrison Barnes,
could have
been anybody, yeah. and you probably average more than
I mean,
that.
That's just a shooter.
Because yeah. you have, yeah, and he's younger back then. He probably had more dunks.
I feel like he's getting to the line more now as a veteran, too. So, yeah. like, you got to, those are different points, right?
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, they still.
That's true.
They're still points, but the way you get them is totally different.
Totally different.
He, yeah. Because, Chris, you're always saying, like, if you need a foul, if you need someone to get to the line, HB yeah. does it at a critical point.
So. There you go. There you go. So, you know, I just, looking at Harrison Barnes, the comparison that I was alluding to before the break is that you were on this, Chris, as I think a lot of us were. Moving off of Trey Lance was as much about dealing with Kyle Shanahan as it was about actual football. Money-wise, they didn't necessarily have to get rid of Trey. They didn't want to deal with, why didn't Trey get this many reps? What are your thoughts on Trey? How is Trey looking? That was, he was a high draft pick. Different reason.
Right.
High draft pick. I don't want to deal with it. Send him to Dallas. He's somebody else's headache now. I think if the media and if look, you think that social media doesn't matter. If there continues to be just an uproar of Harrison over and over again, I don't know that he gets traded, but they will have to move. Let's be honest. I love Mike Brown. That was a terrible answer.
It was
about Harrison Barnes. That was a bad answer.
Yeah. He didn't have, yeah, you should, 20 games in, you should probably have an answer to what this guy's role is.
It's still
being
worked
on.
We need him to rebound? Everybody needs to rebound. Is this CYO?
Yeah.
Is this CYO? Everybody, what exactly is it? You don't even know. That's like when you have a job and you want to get a promotion.
Yep.
And you say, hey, what do I have to do to get this promotion? Yeah, yeah. And your boss doesn't know what to tell you. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you got to do more of this, and you got to work here, and we just want to see you be a bit more independent. Give me facts.
Yep.
Mike Brown does not really know.
Or doesn't want to say.
Or doesn't
want to
put
him on blast.
He doesn't want to put him on blast.
Yeah.
But when they're game planning, it's just, he's just a body. He's just a body.
Yes, he is. He really, I mean, yeah, it feels disrespectful to put it like that, but I mean, that's essentially what he is. Like, he is a 6'8", he's a placeholder for
for the player they want.
For an archetype, really. I mean, yeah, it really is. It's like, this is the frame of a guy that should be playing in this position, that we want in this mm-hmm. position, but he's just not producing like how we would want that person to produce. And to me, that's the most frustrating thing about HB is just like, Kessler Edwards will check in, and I realize Kessler Edwards has checked in because his energy defensively, whether it's too high or he's too handsy, at least much like Chris Duarte, I recognize him on defense. I'm like, Chris Duarte, he's fouling a lot, but I notice him out there. Too many times Harrison's guarding guys like Brandon Ingram, and I mean, he gets killed going across screens, trying to fight through screens, but just – it just doesn't feel like there's much resistance there. And then offensively, again, Mike Brown saying the reason why you don't notice him or there's inconsistency offensively is because he doesn't run plays for him. Well, that doesn't mean that you should get three shots. Like, do you run plays for Trey Lyles often? Do you run plays for you know, all these guys? Like, I obviously there's a good handful of guys that they do run plays for, but just because you're not running plays for him, you still don't really see Harrison get involved. It doesn't feel like he's ever really making his impact known on the game. And I just feel like, again, like at some point, you can get better from that position. That's where I thought you were going with the Trey Lance is, you know, it feels like Mike Brown puts Harrison out there just because he likes the guy Harrison is, mm-hmm. and he likes what he represents from a player in general and as a professional. But then it's almost like he doesn't want to take him out or you know, definitely not take him out of the starting lineup, but doesn't want to pull his minutes too much because, well, I want to reward a guy who does all the things right. And all you know, if I don't feel like there's a guy that I can go to on the bench that's head and shoulders better than him, then I'd much rather just run out with it, live and die with Harrison and hope that he does, you know, take a moment to step up in something and does it. Because the thing about Harrison is he's safe. He is such a mm-hmm. safe player. If you're a coach, more times than not, you have to feel like you're not going to get in trouble believing in a guy like Harrison Barnes. You know, like he's just somebody who's really trustworthy. And, you know, I think he ends up burning you because he does have a little bit of passive nature to
him. Yeah, no, I'd let Harrison Barnes sell me a house.
Yeah. Totally.
I would trust a house from Harrison Barnes. Yeah, I'd let him I'd let him sell me a car.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think he'd sell me a lemon. I think he's an upstanding right. citizen. Do I think he's a good fourth option on a championship team?
No, I don't.
No.
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 Yeah. And I wonder if Monty thinks that as well. Because like that's the thing also is, you know, we can complain all we want. We can say fans can cause an uproar about whoever it is that they don't want out of here, but at the end of the day, what does Monty McNair think? And I don't think we've gotten a clear answer. I mean, I thought people kind of felt like this offseason was the time to move on from Harrison. If you ever were going to move on from him, there was guys like Kyle Kuzma and Jeremy Grant out there that you could have really heavily pursued. But I don't know. I kind of feel like clearly Monty liked Harrison. I just don't know where he stands 20 games into this season, if he's changed his mind or if they still feel like, hey, like, let's give this guy, for whatever reason, even more time to kind of get adjusted. I don't believe that, but I just wonder what, at the end of the day, what does Monty
McNair. Is that his whole career to get adjusted?
That's how I feel. I mean, and he's the second longest tenured Sacramento King behind De'Aaron Fox. Like, he's been here longer than anybody else. It's just, and I also wonder how much of it is he's from, now I know Monty did re-sign him this offseason, but how much of his fit makes sense with how this team was built? I mean, clearly, again, Monty had the option to move on from him from this unit, and he clearly felt like Harrison belonged with this unit, but I don't know. Like, to me, it kind of feels like a little bit like Davion Mitchell, where this guy was brought in when this team was trying to do something completely different, and with this team now, it just doesn't really make a lot of sense, or it doesn't seem to be fitting, at least.
Got to get to a break. When we get back, is the answer to the Harrison Barnes question somewhere on that bench? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.